I remained in Washington for 3 years, and I found it had a very valuable experience. I really did. I learned a great deal about gerontology, which has been very useful to me since. But I was getting on in age, shall I say, and I felt I didn't have to work quite so hard. So in 1980, I made plans to resign and to come back to the Midwest. And I received a sabbatical from the community for a year in which I would just look around and see what I wanted to do next. So I asked to live here at Mundelein and was accepted. And at that time, there was a professor who was very interested in establishing a center on aging. Not so much to deliver service to older people, but to deliver education about the aging process to everybody else. So we approached, I believe Sister Susan Rink was currently president. And she was very agreeable, except I had to raise my own money. I wasn't in the budget. So, ever the optimist, I said, all right, I'll try. I fell heir to a very lovely office over in what we used to call the Yellow House. Another program was working up there, and I fell heir to the furniture and everything else. And for 5 years, I was able to handle it and to do it, and we had some very interesting programs. But at that time, the administration changed in Washington. Funding became tighter, and also we had a different president come in. We had not had a male president before, and he had different ideas, and he wanted, did not want to, the Yellow House where I had my office to be used in that capacity. So I lost my wonderful office and was delegated to the lower floor of what was called the Learning Resource Center, Sullivan Center. And it would be impossible to operate without a broader landscape, shall I say. In the meantime, Sister Mary Breslin became president, and she heard about the older hostel program, and I was interested in that too. And she asked me if it would be possible to start one here. So I made all the necessary connections. The headquarters were in Boston. So for 5 summers, we had mostly two programs each summer. That program, the Elder Hostel program, is doing very, very well today. It's for people 55 and older who would like some intellectual stimulation, but they don't want to bother with term papers and assignments and grades. So they would come into our college campus in the beginning for a week. They usually were offered 3 courses. And then the college, of course, or the university, wanted them to have a good experience and to provide other kinds of experiences for them. So we had an excellent program here. I was able to persuade some of our faculty, because they would be paid for, not a munificent sum, but they would receive a salary. And they enjoyed the older person who was there simply because they are interested. There's no other ulterior motive or, I might add, distraction. And they found it very rewarding. And I was able to coax some of the faculty, some of the people, to do it. And we had some very interesting experiences. And then we could use the resources of Illinois. I remember Northwestern University had a series of free concerts. And they would send a bus for their people to come and partake in it. So a couple of summers, we did that. We became very interested in a man connected with the Frank Lloyd Wright Foundation in Oak Park. he's a lecturer and a really fine speaker. One of the most popular speakers we had was a man named Lyman Shepherd. And Lyman Shepherd is associated with the Frank Lloyd Wright Foundation in Oak Park. So it always consisted of his initial lecture, which was very dramatic. He would come in dressed as Frank Lloyd Wright, a big black swirling cape and a soft velvet pork pie hat. And he'd say, "I am Frank Lloyd Wright." And he would go on as if he were the person. And then he would take us on a trip out to Oak Park. And he was a delight. But all of the faculty who contributed to the program made it very worthwhile. And then when we affiliated in 91 with Loyola, I don't think they were particularly concerned with the early hostile program or knew about it. The Paul has one, I think, but and I was wearing out too on my head. So I was quite willing to quit having the program. I have tried in the 80s and the 90s since I've come back to become involved in our local community. And so I was a member of the Edgewater Community Council early on in the 80s. I also became a member of the on the board. And I became a board member of the North Lakeside Culture Center. And that's the beautiful mansion down, second mansion from the corner of Granville. There are wonderful programs there. I stayed about 6 years on all of those, and then following the celebration of the centennial of Edgewater, which was a stunning success for the Edgewater Community Council, we started, we didn't want to let all the material we gathered be lost. And so one of the women helping me in that program, and Kathy Gemperly, who's a graduate from Mundelein, I started the Edgewater Historical Society, and it has been going very strong ever since. And today, my most exciting involvement is with Little Brothers, Friends of the Elderly. And I'll try and be very brief in summing that up. And way back in the late 50s, Sister St. Irene Richard was chairperson of the French department here. And she went over to Paris and met Armand Marcuset. And he was a young aristocrat who had survived World War II and was very concerned about the fate of the elderly. So many of their families had been decimated. And he was very concerned. And he started a quasi-religious group called Little Brothers of the Poor to minister to the elderly. And he wanted to come to the United States. And Sister St. Irene said, "Why don't you come to Chicago?" And he did. And so today, there are 7 different communities around the country. They call themselves Little Brothers, Friends of the Elderly. But the largest is here in Chicago. It has one of our own graduates, Tina Stretch, as the executive director. And she is one of the best administrators I have ever worked with. She is just fabulous. So I am on the board of directors of Little Brothers Friends of the Elderly. And that gives me great pleasure. Great enjoyment of what he does. So, at the age of 85, this is, you've covered a lot of ground.
You've written that the older person is a giver, not a receiver of services.
Well, an older person should be. We all are vulnerable, and we all are going to become dependent eventually. But on the other hand, we have something to give, truth. And sometimes I think the kind of thing that you're doing, you're calling on people to record their memories, is one of the ways in which older people can contribute. And there are many ways in which they can contribute, and I have seen it happen. one of the programs that I was associated with, foster grandparent program, older people, helping little children. And I'm also on the advisory council of that, still that same federal agency I worked for in Washington, but it's a separate program. It's called Senior Companions. And this is a program run locally by the Chicago Department on Aging, where older people, usually of low income, receive a small stipend and training and out-of-pocket money, and they spend 20 hours a week serving an elderly. And usually it's organized so that they know where they're going. But they do a tremendous job. And so many elderly could remain out of institutions if they just had a little boost, a little help, going to the store for them, for instance, taking them to the doctor, that kind of thing. So I have become very involved with those two programs, and I still am. So anyhow, I don't have a lot of time in which to get bored.
It doesn't look like it. You had a very successful career as a teacher, an instructor, a dean, and then your government agency that you worked with. How do you see the relationship between such a full professional life and your religious life?
Well, in religious orders, there is the group that we call contemplative, where they are primarily interested in developing a rich prayer life and praying for the rest of the world. Prayer was their main objective. Particularly in the 19th century, although it did not start there, there was a need to be met. And when the five sisters who started our community, they were five young women who came from Ireland in 1833 and started in Philadelphia, there was a whole immigrant population in this country at that time. Then Catholics were in the minority and economically at the bottom of the heap, so that there was a work to be accomplished. And I think that work to be accomplished can translate itself in many ways. You use whatever talents you have, and they're all different, to help in some way, to help others, to help society. And I think that in itself is a very strong and smart vocation.
You wrote too, I read that each decade has its own concerns. For example, in the 40s it was World War II, 60s and 70s had their own concerns, the civil rights in Vietnam. As this decade is coming to a close, what do you see as important concerns for both women students and women religious?
You mean in the millennium?
For this decade, yeah.
In the 90s.
In the 90s, and then what?
Looking ahead.
Exactly.
I hesitate in the midst of so many experts, you know, to summarize, but I do think it is a time in which we have seen a lot of individualism, and there is a need to see the needs of other people. And yet at the same time, I am simply amazed at the number of not-for-profit organizations, and that's the kind that I got onto all along, not-for-profit organizations that are administering to others. For instance, in the board of directors of Little Brothers, most of the board members happen to be women, and their brilliance, their accomplishments, their willingness to serve, their talents, I have simply found amazing and wonderful. And I think in the 20th century, perhaps women will still be trying to get through the glass ceiling, which seems to be ever present once they rise so high. But at the same time, I think women have used themselves and will continue to do so. Not that all the social problems are going to be resolved. When you read the daily newspaper, iniquities, the same fierce hatreds between people throughout the world, which result in wars, still persist. And that is one of the saddest things, I think, that violence as a means of solution is very sad. I think we have to look for peace in a positive way. But peace has to come as a result of attacking the problems of poverty, of lonesomeness, among the elderly, or those who are homeless. The problems are still there, I would like to say. So there's more work to be done.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Angela.